Water. Earth. Fire. Air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased, in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series, Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a year has passed since my cousin and I started podcasting about Avatar. And although we've all been through a lot in this past year, we believed Aang could save the world. And you know what? We were right. After ending the 100-year war, with the help of their friends, Avatar Aang and Fire Lord Zuko transformed the Fire Nation colonies into the United Republic of Nations, a society where benders and non-benders from all over the world could live and thrive in peace and harmony. They named the capital of this great land Republic City. Avatar Aang accomplished many remarkable things in his life, but sadly, his time in the world came to an end, and like the cycle of the seasons, the cycle of the Avatar began anew. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, the Legend of Korra.
People of Republic City, welcome to Kin Folklore. We're back to explore the world of Avatar by delving into the complexities of its sequel, The Legend of Korra. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who podcast about our favorite fantasy and sci-fi television shows. You know, a year ago, we embarked on a journey to podcast about Avatar, hopped on the back of Appa, yip yip, and it was an incredible ride. He was great, awesome, little furry guy. We visited the Southern Air Temple. We stood at the Northern Water Tribe. And we had tea in the walls of Ba Sing Se. And finally, we got in that Avatar state and took Ozai out and found balance in the world.
Last week, we visited Republic City for the first time when we discussed episodes 1-4 of the book 1 of Korra. We learned a lot about the state of things in the city since it was Cranefish Town. Tensions between the benders and non-benders remained very high, and the world has experienced a technology revolution, but it hasn't entirely leveled the playing field. Benders still have an advantage, and as the Avatar in training, Korra is learning about that.
You know, in the process of learning, I just want to let you guys know that Kin Folklore is going to have adult content. So if you enjoy a podcast where the hosts blow up the spots of your favorite characters and their love interest, like Icky giving a tour to your love interest girlfriend, you've come to the right place. I mean, Asami, Korra was mortified, but you know, you don't have to be. So let's start with episode 5, The Spirit of Competition. And in that spirit, the Fire Ferrets are back following the events of episode 4. Korra has rejoined the team. Asami swings by to drop off their new uniforms and leaves with Mako. And Korra gently lets Bolin know that she's not into him. You know, like kind of like he's like, hey, you want to go? I got to go train. See you later, dude.
Poor Bolin. So,
poor Bolin. So when Bolin asks Mako if he thinks he should date Korra, Mako tells him that Korra isn't really girlfriend material.
This is why I'm not a big Mako stan, okay?
Yeah.
This is harsh. What do you mean she's not girlfriend material? She's the Avatar.
I mean,
her teammate. You're lucky she lets you in her presence. What are you talking about, bro?
I don't understand him. I really don't. I mean, later on, there's some things that Bolin says that I'm going to extrapolate even further about him. Because when Bolin says what we talk about later, I was like, yes, you're right. Exactly. Like, dude is just a waste. Like, I'm not a fan. I'm not a big Mako fan. He has redeeming moments and he takes them all away. All the time.
It's true. He has moments where I'm like, okay, this guy's great. And then he has moments where I'm like, this guy, why is he on the show? I don't want him.
Exactly.
I don't need him. So
exactly.
Not a great look for Mako.
No, I mean, I don't even understand the girlfriend material thing. She's the Avatar, so it doesn't even make any sense. So
she's beautiful, she's smart, she's strong, she's a talented bender. Oh, and I don't know, she's the Avatar.
Yeah, tough situation. So Korra consults with Jinora and Ikki about what she should do about her crush on Mako. Jinora basically tells her a story about a princess who goes off and, you know, to show her love and win her love of, she burns down a whole city. And it reminds me of another young princess.
Daenerys, is that you?
I know.
It's, Khaleesi, it's like Jinora out mother here. Of dragons?
Exactly.
Major spoiler for Game of Thrones.
Somebody ring the bells. Ring the bells. All right. Freaking Jinora's out here watching Game of Thrones. It's crazy. I actually, you know, I don't know what the creators are going to do, but I actually wondered whether that's something that may happen in the Fire Nation later. I just had this thought. I was like, well, man, I wonder if they're going to expand on that little story. My thought is it's not. It's going to be something that's a throwaway. But that was just like something she was saying. But I just thought about it. I was like, I wonder if that story comes back somewhere where we're like, oh, wow, that's something that Jinora was talking about that she had read about, if they do like flashback content. So I don't know. I'm kind of holding out hope. otherwise, it's just about
you want to see another princess burn stuff?
You know,
you have that itch.
I want to see a princess burn stuff when it makes sense. Okay. Like, I had no problem with her burning stuff. I had a problem with it not making sense. You know what I mean? Like, and then I had a problem with everybody acting like it was bad. No, don't get me started here. Okay. Dracarys, they killed Missandei. Death to them all. All right. So Pema comes along. All right. Right in the middle of this story. It says she's been there long enough. And she tells them about when she and Tenzin got together. Tenzin was in a relationship with another woman, and it became too difficult to watch him with the wrong person. Ooh, tough. So Pema told him how she
that
felt.
That cut deep.
Deep, especially when you find out who that person is. You're just like, oh, damn. Whoa, Pema. So in the next scene, it's the Pro Bending Tournament, and it's starting, and the Fire Ferrets are playing. And they pretty much easily win. They just destroy this team. It looks like they've really been practicing. They're in their zone. And after the match, Korra awkwardly decides to, inspired by Pema's story, to ask Mako out. And goes in for the kiss and gets rejected. Harsh. Asami walks in and it's weird. It's a little awkward. And Mako's like, I'm sorry. I just don't feel the same way about you. And then he gets salty. When Bolin swoops in and asks Korra out, you know, she's like, hey, let's just go hang out. Let's go do something. And she's like, reluctantly accepts. And even though he was like, nah, Mako's still over here, like, irritated. What's up with Mako, man? Like, golly, I just can't.
Because Mako likes her, but he thinks he should like Asami. Whatever. You know what? I don't even want to start.
No, I think Mako likes her, but Mako's using Asami. I think Mako is confused. I don't know. I've had this take for a while. I feel like Mako's like, wait, like, I liked Asami. She's cute. He did think she was cute because when she hit him with the bike. But then now it's like he's like torn. But part of his torn is not so much about Asami. I don't know. I feel like he's not that. I feel like it's more about everything that comes along with Asami, the status of that.
I just want to say, for the record, I'm a person who is against this little love triangle. I've always hated it.
I hate it too.
That said, I've spent too much time thinking about it. Like, let's move on. I've spent way too much time trying to dissect the motivations of cartoon teenagers. Like, let's
just not. Okay, I feel you, but I am irritated. I'm super, like, irritated sometimes with Mako and just his takes in general, trust me. And plus, I just love Asami and I love Korra, so, like,
yeah, I feel them. Like, they're both too good for him. I love Asami, so
yeah, I really do. Like, she's super dope. And even the way she's handled this situation, like, even when she handles the situation, like, when this comes up, it's just, like, shows who she is as a person. And it's just, it's great. Both of them. I love them both. So, while on their date, Bolin and Korra see Tano
mm-hmm.
and the wolf bats. you know, the new pop group out of, no, sorry.
Honestly, that's what I thought they were. When the scene first panned to them, I was like, is this like a pop group? Like what, is this a band?
I don't know what was going on, but he comes over, you know, they're the reigning champs. And Tano steps up to Korra and she's like, you know, getting in his face, you know, ready to go. Cause he's trying to, he's saying little things, you know, he gets all in it talking about if you want private lessons, if you want to know what a real pro bender looks like. Like, dude, first of all, yuck. Second of all, you don't know who you're fucking with. All right. And right out of that, Naga comes in and scares off the wolf bats and Tano shook. He shakes up. And Bolin's hype because he's like, I've never seen anybody like get under Tano's skin like that. You are one of a kind, Korra. And, you know, she kind of is. She kind of is one of a kind because you know what? He can see she's the fucking avatar, Mako. Anyway, in their next game, though, the porcupines, like, are destroying them. They almost get washed. Like, it's really, really bad because of all of the tension about the relationship stuff, and Bolin doesn't even know what the hell is going on. He's like, why is this so weird? And finally he's just like, you know what, I'm gonna step up and I'm gonna save the day. And he does. He gets them out of a bind. After the game, Mako approaches and tells Korra that his feelings are complicated. And you know,
updated
at
his
that point,
Facebook status.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous. God, this guy, he's like, you know, I do like you, but I also like Asami, and this and that. And Korra's like, screw this, I'm going for it. And she kisses him. Bolin sees this, and he goes through all the stages of grief at one time.
I wanted to hug him, my baby.
Oh my gosh.
Poor Bolin.
And he leaves crying. What a dirtbag. And then Mako blames Korra. Like, he didn't come out here talking about my feelings are complicated. Like, then he blames Korra. Like, real stand-up shit, right? So, so then Mako retrieves Bolin, who is basically eating his feelings.
You know, I felt him in this moment. I was like, I see you, Bolin. I know you got to get the carbs in. You need to get some sweets, some savories. Good for
gotta
you.
Get it in. I love Bolin for this. But then Bolin may have the line that is the most meta that he ever speaks to the creators. Okay? He says this to the creators of this show. I don't feel like he's just saying it to him. Mako says, I told you dating a teammate was a bad idea. And Bolin says, you're a bad idea. Yes. Yes, he is.
It's one of my favorite lines in the show. You're a bad idea. It's such a like childish retort, but it's hilarious. It's really funny.
Yeah, it's so funny. Because I thought I literally like out loud was like, yes, Bolin, you're exactly right. Like, here's the thing. I would have taken another character that's going to come in later, like another Fire Nation person over Mako. Like, it just, I get why he's in there. But they're trying to recreate the, you know, the whole team avatar dynamic. But man, this man is no Zuko. Okay. Is he just not? I mean, not even close.
Not
I'm just
even.
Saying.
Not even close. Not even close. A tiny bit close.
Yeah. Exactly. So I know we're going to dunk on Mako quite a bit with his tortured existence and his desire to be better than he is. And he's just like, I don't know. I don't understand him.
It really makes me miss the days of honor.
I mean, 100%. You missed. You see what they're trying to do. You're like, this is no, guys. Sorry, this is like, well, getting very very meta right now. But this is like, listen, this guy's not Zuko. Even with his brooding on his worst day, he even broods wrong. You know what I mean? Like the guy from Game of Thrones. Even their gods are wrong. Yeah, even his brooding is wrong. Okay. So in the semifinal, they're all back together and they face the Buzzard Wasp. And they play so badly that Bolin and Mako both get knocked out, leaving Korra in the ring alone. Korra recognizes she's not going to let him go out like that. They worked so hard for this, and she's worked so hard for this. She manages to win the match for the Fire Ferrets, and they make it into the finals. In that match, Bolin is hurt, and Korra, you know, is healing Bolin after the game and apologizes for hurting his feelings. And, you know, Bolin takes on the chin. Bolin is just awesome. I like Bolin.
Yeah, he really is. He like, recognizes there's no point in... he's still hurt, but, like, there's no point in being mad about it. People feel how they feel, you know?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. He was like, yeah, but we had fun, right? Like, you know, you weren't just like, he wanted to know in that moment, you weren't just putting on that you were having fun with me. And she's like, no, it was a great time. Like, we had so much fun. And
well, I thought that was how to treat a lady.
He does. He mm-hmm. does. He really does. I like that about him. And meanwhile, while they're having this little chat, a buzzer goes off. And the Wolfbats literally have knocked out their opponent in a single round. Leaving
seconds,
the fire ferrets
it's
a
like
little bit
they
shook.
Start the game and then the game is over.
It's like, what? It's over? What happened? Oh, man.
Oh, so, in episode 6, and the winner is, while practicing the fire ferrets, hear a radio announcement from Amon. He tells the council that they must shut down the pro bending tournament and close the arena. When Korra, Mako, and Bolin head to City Hall to find out what the council is going to do, they learn that both Tenzin and Tarlok agree that they should cancel the event. It's too dangerous to hold it.
And they never agree. They'll be agreeing. They don't agree about nothing.
Yeah.
So that's wild.
I mean, but I can also understand their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
The meeting is interrupted when Lin Beifong shows up and tells them not to cancel and that it's time to take a stand for bending.
Not only does she tell them not to cancel, she breaks their fucking gavel. Like, she's like, nah, stop. Don't even. He's like, this meeting is, nah, this not, we not done till I say we done. I love her.
I love her. She's so good.
She's great.
So Chief Beifong has an idea. She'll provide extra security for the arena. Her police officers will wear armor that's impervious to chi blocking. And, you know, that when she says that they'll have a plan to protect everyone, Tarlok and the other council members agree to allow the game to continue.
Mm.
Afterwards, Tenzin and Lin have a little debrief, and it is awkward. This is frosty.
Yeah,
frosty.
I mean, you know, here's the thing. He goes up and he's really concerned about Lin, but Lin ain't trying to hear it. She's like, oh, are you worried about things about me now? That's what's going on.
Yeah, you're worried about my physical well-being. But you weren't worried about my feelings.
Yeah, exactly.
Korra deduces very smartly that the icy relationship is because they used to be the couple that Pema was talking about.
Whoa, wait, tough look. Tough look for Pema to be like he was with the wrong person. Oh my goodness. I mean, I can't see them together. So I think she's right in this moment, like honestly. But I do love them both.
I
love them
both
equally. I think
they're both too headstrong.
Yeah.
You know, I think that like they have different manners and sometimes that actually is a positive thing, but they're both stubborn. Neither one of them is really willing to give. And so I think it would have been a rocky relationship at best. I do kind of like the idea of Toph and Aang's kids getting together. Like that is cute to me, but
me too.
Yeah, I can see why this relationship may not have worked.
I mean, but think about Toph and Aang, right? Like, they're just such opposite people. Like, even, like, going back to the Rift, like, how they have the real difference in philosophies. Like, one very traditional, like, wants to go back to tradition. One is always pushing forward with progress and looking towards the future and not caught up in that. You can very much see a lot of their two personalities intertwine. Interestingly enough, though, like, Lin gets along, from what they say, with Aang as a child, like, super well. Like, she loved him. You know what I mean?
I think, I mean, I don't want to spoil for the future of the show in case people are kind of listening along and watching at the same time. But I think Lin is a really interesting character. I don't think she'd be completely closed off to other points of view. Mm-hmm. I just think that she's very stubborn. It takes her a while to get there. And we see the same with Tenzin. So I'll just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So somewhere else in the city, Amon is watching his little minions, the other equalists, plan for an attack. He's notified that the council will not cancel the game, and he says everything is going exactly as planned.
Mm.
At the match, the fire ferrets open with a little demonstration by Pabu. This was hilarious because it's like cute, right? It's really cute. Like, Bolin and Pabu have been practicing for it. Pabu does his little demonstration, and then the wolf bats come in like it's a Britney Spears concert.
Yeah.
Like, it's just
I just want to reference, it's
crazy.
The evolution from when we saw the bendy matches when we first met the Blind Bandit, right? And we saw the boulder, and we saw the, to now with pyrotechnic shows and people coming out on moving platforms and there's rules. This is like, this is evolved. This is amazing.
Yeah. It was really funny. So the game gets started and the refs are clearly on the Wolfbat side. I mean, they're just cheating left and right. They're making crazy violations and nothing happens. The ferrets manage to stay in the match and strategize on how to beat them fair and square. Like, it's important to them to make sure that they don't ignore the rules, mainly because the refs are against them, but also I think that's just who they are.
I mean, it's important to some of them. Cora was kind of like, that's no fun. They're cheating, let's cheat. Let's like get at them.
I think Cora was ready to use all three of her elements.
Yeah, she was.
She was like, I will fire you, I will earthbend you. Like, she's, but Cora's like angry now because her and Tano have this like rivalry going.
Yeah.
So they end up facing off, Cora and Tano, for a tiebreaker, and Cora knocks him out easily, quite embarrassingly.
Washes him. Oh, so good.
But the fire ferrets lose, and when the wolf bats use water with rocks in it to get a knockout. I mean, this was brutal. Like, can you imagine water and rocks hitting you?
No.
I mean,
it's rough.
This should have been like, this was so offensive to me, and like the announcers calling out all these violations, and the refs are so, they're just like, whatever.
Yeah, he's like, there's rocks inside that water. Oh, and Tenzin is going off. Tenzin is like losing his, the guy who hated freaking pro bending to begin with, and now he's like, he knows the rules. He knows what's
know.
Going on.
He's like, that move is illegal. So meanwhile, in the crowd, the Equalists make their move and attack. They start by shocking Lin and Tenzin and immobilizing everyone else with an electric shock. Amon and some of the Equalists get into the ring with the wolf bats and fight them, which I was like, this is not good. I knew from the outgo, I was like, okay, well, at least Cora and Bolin and Mako aren't there because they're about to get washed. Like, this is a wrap for the wolf bats. Amon takes Tano's bending in front of everyone.
The whole arena. Wow.
Which was a horrible scene. And they hang the Equalist banners all over this stadium. Meanwhile, Cora and the fire ferrets are being dragged away and tied up. And Cora has a vision that's a little choppy. She sees Aang and Toph and a man she doesn't know. And Aang is entering the Avatar state in her vision. Mm. Amon makes a speech to the crowd, and he warns all the benders of Republic City that he will do to them what he did to the wolf bats by taking their bending away. He highlights that the technology allows everyone to have the power of chi blocking in their hands and announces that the revolution has begun. The fire ferrets have been tied up by an Equalist, but luckily, Pabu frees them.
Pabu!
Pabu has an excellent run of episodes.
Oh, he does. He really, really goes in these few episodes. And of course, as he's as Bolin's trying to tell him to free him, he's like, hey, he's like talking to him. Here comes old Sad Sack talking about, hey, stop playing around. He's like, dude, I'm trying to explain to Pabu, who is trained by me, what I want him to do. Shut up.
Amon and the Equalists make their exit and they set off on an explosion. Cora tries to follow with waterbending and she just can't. But then with the help of Lin, she nearly catches up. Cora and Lin then fight the Equalists on the roof of the arena. And it's really, I love this. It's an impressive display from these ladies. When Cora falls through the ceiling, Lin saves her. And in that moment, Lin decides not to pursue the Equalist so she can save Cora instead.
Yeah, I love it. I love that Lin, you know, sees she mentions even in, you know, in the tournament while that's going on, she says, I can't believe your sweet mild-mannered father reincarnated into this girl. She's tough as nails. Like, she recognized, and Tenzin says, you know, she's a lot like someone else at that age that I remember mm-hmm. referencing her, and says, you know, you may actually like her if you gave her a chance. And in that moment, you see the, you know, like when they're in the battle that you're talking about, you see like kind of like the relationship thawing. You see her starting to say, okay, you know what? Like, I see what this person is about. She's on the right side of this thing. And I really love that. I love to see them come together in that moment.
They really complement each other. So this whole episode is really, in the episode before, this whole bending tournament sequence of events is really just about like working together as a team and trying to get past your differences. And you really see the two of them complementing each other when they're battling the equalists, because ultimately they have the same goal. They don't always agree how to do it. Lin and Tenzin kind of want Korra to focus on her avatar stuff. They don't really want her getting involved in this way, but Korra doesn't walk away from a fight. And I think you see Lin start to really respect that in this episode. Mm-hmm. So I just love this fight because I think it's, one, it's just a really cool scene. Like, the fighting itself is really cool. But two, you get to see two characters who've never fought together before really complementing each other with their skills.
I agree. I 100% agree. And in the aftermath of this, which is what the episode's called, the arena's been shut down. And because of that, people, you know, Mako and Bolin live above the arena, so they're going to have to leave the arena. And Korra comes in super excited to let Mako and Bolin know that they can stay on Air Temple Island. But they have plans already. They're going to go ahead and move in with the Sami. They're going to do it. They're going to do it. They're going to go hang out and live the high life. Asami invites Korra also. She's less, enthused, less than enthused about going over to the estate. Now that they're going over to stay with the Sami, she thought she was coming in with hero vibes.
Let's Bolin, be honest, though. If you had a choice between an Airbnb that was, was Air Temple Island, or an Airbnb that was the Sato residence, which one would you choose?
I mean, my man's getting patted down dry just to get back in and get wet again. I'm definitely going to go with the Sato mansion. 100%. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I couldn't be mad at them.
I wasn't mad at all.
Yeah, I couldn't be mad at them.
Yeah, and so, you know, Bolin realizing, yeah, this is tough. Look at Bolin again. Like, he's like, so he acts like he's talking for Pabu and like says, come on, Korra, it's going to be fun. And Korra like laughs like, okay, Pabu, I'll come. Like, really saying it to Bolin. And it's amazing. Like, so she's going to go, right? So, again, Bolin diffusing the tensions. And we move on to the next scene where Chief Beifeng executes a raid on Cabbage Corp headquarters.
Not my Cabbage Corp.
Not my Cabbage Corp. We see the Cabbage Man, the old cabbage vendor, as a statue in front of Cabbage Corp, the father of this guy who's getting picked up right now. And they basically went and looked to see that there was equalist paraphernalia and gloves and other things inside the Cabbage Corp headquarters. And you see Lin at a press conference announcing that she's closing Cabbage Corp.
At least it's not the Avatar. They can't blame this one on the Avatar. Avatar had nothing to do with this.
This is true. This is true. But, you know, and man, what a scene to see the Cabbage Man once again being disgraced and taken out. I'm just saying. The sins of the father. That's all I'm saying.
Anyway. I'm not fighting with you again about the Cabbage Man, so I'm just gonna let you have your joke. But this was a funny moment. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I did too. I love the Not My Cabbage Corp at the end when he's going, not my cabbage corp. Oh, it's so good. So good. So, Korra runs into Tano at City Hall. And she tells him that she's sorry that he lost his bending. And, you know, I know we haven't totally got along, she says, but, you know, I really am sorry that you lost your bending. And, you know, he's basically a broken guy. And, you know, the Lin and Tenzin ask him to come in so they can talk to him about the events of what happened in the arena. And, you know, they say goodbye to Hiroshi Sato, who's leaving after they've questioned him about what he saw. At Sato Manor, the crew goes to check out Future Industries racetrack. Korra and Asami race another driver, and they win. Asami takes it for a spin. You know, Korra throws a little shade. What's your plan for us today? We're going to go get makeovers and our nails done. And she's like, actually, we're going to go drive race cars. Okay?
Yeah. Asami's like, actually, I'm also a badass, so, yeah. You know, you can calm down with that.
Exactly. I've been taking self-defense courses since I was yay high, she says. She lets her know, and she's like, she's into this kind of stuff. So Asami gets to showcase her incredible driving skills, and Korra tells Asami that she was surprised. And Asami tells her that her father made sure that she would take care of herself by taking those self-defense courses I was talking about. I will say this, if you have not checked it out, go check out our homies, Bending Not Breaking. We cover this whole episode in even more depth on an episode that we did with them. Shout out to those fellas. Mm-hmm. And thanks again for having us. But when Korra realizes that she was kind of judgy and judging Asami, they kind of cool out. They have a good little moment, and they get back to the mansion, and Korra's like, hey, can I use the bathroom? Because Bo Lin, he's like, you know, about to go blow up the one downstairs. She says, yeah, go up and, you know, we have a powder room. Go check it out upstairs. You go over upstairs to the left. Leaving the powder room after having an unfortunate event with powder.
Which I can totally relate to. I've done that myself.
Have you choked on the powder?
I have hit the puff a little bit too hard and made a mess. I have done it.
Well, okay. All right.
You got to be skilled in how to use those puffs. Otherwise, you get powder everywhere.
Listen, I'm going to defer to you. I've never been in a powder room in which I could have this issue. So I believe that this could be a real issue. It was a funny moment that led to Korra like leaving out of the bathroom and overhearing Asami's father, Hiroshi Sato, have an incriminating phone conversation. You know, she says, wow, what is he talking about? It sounds like he's like, you know, talking about, you know, with Cabbage Corp, you know, being down, like we're going to be able to make our move this week. And he has all these things he's saying. So she's like, oh, wow, I think this guy's involved in what's going on with the Equalists. So she quickly bounces, makes an excuse. She's got to go babysit. And she makes it over to Tenzin and Lin right away and tells them everything that she knows. Lin and Tenzin tell Korra that 12 years ago, the Agni Kai Triad robbed Sato's house and killed his wife during the break-in, which might be why he has some anti-bending sentiment and some motives. Lin, Tenzin, and Korra head to the mansion to question Hiroshi, and Korra tells Asami that she thinks that, you know, he's involved in the Equalist plot. Mako, of course, why are you doing this? Are you that jealous of us? No, dude, she really thinks that he's involved in the Equalist plot.
Everything is not about you.
Exactly. Oh, my God, this guy. So Hiroshi tries to explain that the conversation was just a little misunderstanding. It's just, you know, business. It's nothing nefarious.
Just business.
You know? Yeah.
Anytime a businessman says it on TV, it's not just business.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Tenzin insists on searching the factory and the warehouse, to which Hiroshi agrees, even at, you know, the total disagreement of Asami. Asami's like, no, you guys are harassing us. And she's like, no, let them search. So they search and they come up empty. They find nothing. Mako and Korra fight about it. Mako's in his feels saying, if you can't let this go, we are not going to be friends anymore. I mean, is he 10? Like, I'm not going to be your friend anymore. What's going on? Korra stands her ground. She's not here for it. She's like, no, I really do think that he's like, I don't care what these searches showed. I know what I heard. Later, Korra gets a little anonymous tip. Like, guy at the factory, when they're having this argument, slides over, puts a little note in her hand. And the tipster lets Lin, Korra, and Tenzin know that there's a secret factory underneath the Sato Mansion. And that, you know, that's where Hiroshi has been building and manufacturing weapons for Amon and the Equalists. So they go back to the mansion. This time they search and they find a tunnel, right? Under the Hiroshi workshop, the officers, Tenzin and Korra, head to the tunnel and leave Asami, Mako, and Bolin above the ground. What they find is that the factory is building mega tanks. And there's all kinds of, you know, Amon banners and Equalist, propaganda. And at this point, Hiroshi traps them. Mako and Bolin get a little restless when they hear the noise from below, and they want to go down into the tunnel. So they, you know, they make the cop, you know, they basically tie up the cop.
Get
the
they commit a crime here.
They do. They basically, like, you know, assault an officer. It's what it is. And they tie him up, and I'm just gonna say, minus the bending, I think Asami is a better, like, fighter than Mako. So he's like, no, you stay here, I'm gonna go check it out. And she's like, okay, I'll chill, whatever. But I digress. She stays. They go down. Hiroshi is now attacking the group, and Lin deduces that the tipster was actually a setup, that Hiroshi wanted them to know that he had the thing down below the mansion so he could trap them and try to take them out. The police, Korra and Tenzin, in what may be the first time we see Tenzin, like, really, really go in fighting, they put up a good fight. But the technology gives Hiroshi Sato an advantage. The Equalists capture the police, load them into the vehicle, and take them to Amon. But Mako and Bolin try to save Tenzin, Korra, and Lin, and just when Hiroshi is about to attack them, Asami arrives, and she asks her father for forgiveness, saying that benders have ruined the world and killed her mother. Asami looks like she's falling for the speech, but she actually turns on her father instead and allows them to escape. Basically, lets the team get out of there. As they leave the mansion, Lin says that she's resigning so that she can take on Amon outside of the law. This is what I like to hear. Like, that's that tough up inside of her. Like, she's like, listen, I'm done with this. I'm getting out of this uniform. I'm going out. I'm about to break some people's faces and break the law. This is what's going to happen. Mako apologizes to Korra for not believing her. Huh. Interesting. This is not going to be the last time that this happens. And he asks if the offer is still, you know, for them to stay at Air Temple Island. And Korra says yes, and Asami can come also. And she says something that lets you see the quality of these people around her and who Korra is. She says, with everything that she's been through, she's really going to need you now, Mako. Like, hey, don't be a dirtbag. Like, don't be lame. Like, go comfort her because she's really going to need you. Like, with this situation with her dad.
Yeah.
Great stuff from Korra.
Mm-hmm. In the following episode, When Extremes Meet, episode 8, Mako, Bolin, and Asami arrive at Air Temple Island. They're greeted by Jinora, Iki, Milo, and Korra. And,
you're pretty.
You know,
can I have some of your hair?
Yeah, Milo is immediately taken with Asami. Can I have some of your hair? Has got to be the most awkward opening.
I mean, it's awkward, but let's just say he's got more game than Mako or Bolin, like, already. Like, let's just put that out there. Milo is, like, young, he's got the snotty nose, and he's still more equipped. Good stuff.
While Korra shows Asami her meager accommodations, Iki tells Asami that, Korra has a crush on Mako.
Oh my god, her face and the animation when this happens, and Asami's cool, so cool. And she's like, "No, I was not.
I didn't
totally
know.
Aware
I
of
was
that.
There.
I didn't know that." Interesting.
Korra and Tenzin head to the ceremony where the new chief of police, Saikon, is being sworn in. He's Chief Beifong's replacement. He announces that he will be reporting directly to Tarlok from now on about all things regarding the Equalists. After the ceremony, Tarlok and Korra exchange words, and he reminds her that she's not yet the Avatar because she hasn't mastered airbending. Low blow.
Yeah.
Korra was devastated by this.
Yeah, that you should have seen her face. Her face when this happens is man.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. He's not wrong. But, like, it's a sore topic for her because she's really been trying at airbending. And so on the way back to Air Temple Island, Tenzin reminds her that she needs to connect with her past lives the way that her father did. You know, he's basically like, you're trying to do this alone and you don't have to. My father had Roku. So Korra tells him that she's seen Aang a few times in visions, but she hasn't been able to connect with him directly. And he tells her she needs to meditate. Later, while Korra is crying, Asami, Mako, and Bolin reassure her and remind her that Aang didn't save the world on his own. He had Katara, Toph, Zuko, and Sokka. So, you know, basically they tell her, you have friends too. We're here to help you. And they decide that they are the new Team Avatar.
Oh, what a moment. Okay.
It was cute. It was really cute.
And I'd love that they knew the history of the Hundred Year War, and they were like, hey, you know what? Like, stop trying to be a hero. But what's really cool about this, too, is that every avatar has a team avatar. Like, even Kyoshi, Roku, Kurok. It's like, so it's, like, really cool to see, like, that tradition always happens, you know? Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. That evening, Asami drives them into the city in her car, and they hear a call on the radio that some equalists have busted out of jail, and they see several Chi-Blockers trying to escape. Using the combination of Asami's driving, bending, and the Chi-Blocking technology from Future Industries, they manage to recapture the escapees. Tarlok shows up, and he is salty and ungrateful AF, just like, why are you even here? Nobody asked you to be here. And he tells Korra to stay out of the way. If she's not going to be a part of his task force, he doesn't want her to be involved. The next day, Tarlok proposes a new law. He's outlawing the membership of the Equalist movement and setting a curfew for non-benders. Tenzin opposes him using the same argument that Aang had used in Imbalance, which is you can't punish everybody because of the actions of a few. But Tenzin loses the argument. Team Avatar hears another distress call over the police scanner and heads to the site of a supposed Equalist uprising. What they find instead is that the power has been cut off and a crowd has come to protest. Korra tries to advocate for the group, but Tarlok tells the police to round up the crowd because they're all Equalists, which is not true. Mm. These are just non-benders who want their electricity turned back on.
Exactly.
Korra tries to free the crowd, and Tarlok retaliates by arresting first Asami, then Mako and Bolin with the non-benders. At the police station, Tenzin tries to get Chief Saikon to... Chief Saikon to release Korra's friends, and Saikon tells them that all the Equalists are being detained until the council deems that they're no longer a risk, which is essentially stripping them of their due process. Tenzin and Korra leave, super frustrated. And unable to sleep, Korra decides to head back to City Hall on Naga to speak to Tarlok.
Speak in air quotes. She was not real. It felt very ominous. Like, she's like, yo, you and me got to talk. Like, I was like, uh-oh, she's not playing with him now. It's over.
Well, let me just say, she certainly didn't want an audience.
No,
neither did Tarlok. He sends his assistant away, and you know, he finds out that if they're alone or not. So he tells Korra that he's not going to release her friends, but only if she does what he wants. And Korra refuses. She's not going to listen to him. She doesn't agree with his approach. He attacks her, and the two have a really dope fight.
So dope.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Korra gets the better of him, and then he reveals himself to be a bloodbender. When he knocks her out, she sees another vision. And Tarlok puts her in the back of the van and tells her he's sending her out of Republic City where no one will find her.
Ugh. What a fight. What a battle. I was disappointed that, like, you know, it was the only, like, he was getting washed. Like, you know, like, she was basically, like, she was coming down after knocking him, like, down to the ground from, like, the second floor. like, oh, you know, am I still half an Avatar now? Am I still not the Avatar? Like, you know what I mean? Like, she basically was talking shit. And to see him pull that out, he knew he had to pull something out because there was no way he was going to win that fight outside of the bloodbending.
No, no way. It was, I love this fight. It was really cool.
Yeah.
Okay. There was like some pretty extraordinary bending in these episodes. I mean, we got Tenzin in Hiroshi Sato's factory, which was really, really cool. Lin is just great in almost every scene, but her, as we talked about before, her and Korra in the arena. Korra and Tarlok. It's just, there's a really great demonstrations. And, you know, shout out to Asami, who's not a bender, but also demonstrated that she has, like, a ton of other skills that are useful. I mean, I will stand by the fact that Sokka was always a useful person to have on Team Avatar in Atla, but Asami is even more skilled, I think, in a lot of ways than Sokka was. And so
yeah, I almost put you know, Asami like in the same category of not only Sokka but also Suki. Like Suki's skill, like as a fighter, was like super amazing. Like as a non-bender, like you know what I mean. And so was and Ty Lee also. Even though they
Ty Lee the and group. May, yep. I think Asami's as skilled as them, at least.
Yeah, exactly. And then I also thought, Tarlok's like, you know, I thought Tarlok's like, you know, skill was amazing to see for the first, because we haven't really seen him bending like that. Yes, during the raids, but it was like basic stuff. This was like, you know, when she's hitting fire bending and he like encloses himself totally in the water and doesn't allow like her to like penetrate, and then she has to like actually like while fire bending swing around like a wall that was made out of rock that had water falling over it. It was like, it was just his ability to hold her off the way he did showed that he's no slouch as a bender either. It just, you know, he's not the Avatar. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no, Tarlok is an extremely talented waterbender. I mean, I think all of the benders that we've met in the series are very talented, because Mako and Bolin are also very talented. Obviously, Tenzin is, you know, he's the only adult airbender in the world, so there's not a ton to compare him to, but I think he's at least as skilled as his father. Like, he's very, very strong at bending too. Lin is a really good earthbender and a really good fighter. She is smart about how she uses her metal bending. So I just feel like the benders in this series are just so strong, and you get some really great scenes that are just incredible because you have technology and bending meeting in a way that is interesting to watch. Like, it's fun to see these scenes how like Asami is using these chi blocking gloves, right, with the electric shock, and driving a car, while Korra, Mako, and Bolin are using their skills as well. It just works really wonderful together.
Agree. And that's why I'm almost like, I'm really excited about like future like Avatars. Like, I know there's a lot that we'll talk about in Korra, but I'm actually like really excited to see how the world, because what we're seeing, what you're talking about, is the world advancing around these benders and what that means for, like, you know, like it's not like they can't use technology too, you know what I mean? Like, so you not only have the bending, but they have the technology and the mechanical abilities that are really awesome. So it's cool, it's good stuff. What do you think some of the things we are that we learned here from the White Lotus this time around? What did we learn in this episode?
So, you know, I think we learned what the consequences of having fear govern, right? And I think this is really interesting because I think that we as Americans have seen this happen in our own government many times. As a danger from the equalist movement builds in these episodes, the government becomes less and less of a democracy, and it moves further and further away from the principles that the city was founded on. Aang and Zuko worked really hard together, as we saw in the comics, to create a more just world, and it wasn't always easy, and they struggled. And now the city is moving back towards very oppressive ways. creating a curfew for non-benders, denying them access to resources, and suppressing their free speech, and then stripping them of their due process under the law, all under the guise that all non-benders are part of the equalist movement. Republic City is supposed to, by nature, be a representative democracy with a council that listens to the people, but it still struggles with the tensions that were there from its inception. Tarlok's instinct to, you know, to control the situation is to suppress the will of all non-benders. And for the time being, he's being allowed to do that with the help of law enforcement and some of the other council members. It's just really hard to see this, because this is not the way democracies are supposed to work, even when there's a threat.
Totally agree. Totally agree. And it's so paralleled our world, like when you're talking about when there's like, you know, a protest and there's like, oh, now we're going to institute a curfew. And, you know, just because people are out protesting, they have to be part of some like, you know, nefarious organization. So like the government officials, we're just going to lump them all together. It was like, wow, this has such commentary about the way that this happens, like you said, when fear governs. That was really strong, you know, and you see like there at the protest when Asami's like making the case for the non-benders along with Korra, like, hey, these are not part of the equalist movement. They're just people that want their life. You know what I mean? Like they want to go back to their house and live out their night like they would expect to. And, you know, Tarlok has lost it. He wants to look like a savior. He wants mm-hmm. to look like the person who's riding in on the white horse. So in order to have the white horse, he has to demonize everybody else, you know?
And I think that he, you know, for the listeners who listen to our episode about the comics, I think that he has the same instinct that Zuko almost succumbed to, right? When mm-hmm. the city was under attack. But Zuko learned that wasn't effective. Like he ended up apologizing for that, at the end of Smoke and Shadow. So I can understand the inclination that people have when a situation's out of control. Safety does become the most important thing. And we have seen the equalists essentially destroy the arena, right? And take someone's mm-hmm. bending away. They're extremely dangerous. But that doesn't mean that we just get to say, well, democracy is suspended for now.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And it's so similar to the battles that we saw in Cranefish Town in Imbalance, right? Like this is so linked to that as well. Like when the benders were kind of like all the council meetings. I mean, there were more people on the council at that point, which is weird. There's only four people now. But I mean, there were still like, you know, these conversations about like how to, you know, what is too restrictive or too oppressive, a law to, you know, either enact on benders or non-benders. And yeah, I think that, I think this is just how things start tend to be a way that they can be perpetuated, and it takes real strength to like turn them around, you know? And I think Cranefish Town has had this, which now is Republic City, has had this struggle since its onset, you know? So, another thing I think we learned too, right? Team Avatar, we got a new Team Avatar. And, you know, it's good to see in these stories that, you know, even as powerful as the Avatar is, they can't fight all these things and all these different forces on their own. That mm-hmm. every Avatar needs help. Aang would not have gotten very far without Katara, Sokka, and later Toph and Zuko. And Korra's the same. Despite her bending ability, her grit, and her determination, Korra cannot save Republic City by herself. She's going to need help of others. I like that this is like a little bit of a multi-generational like kind of Team Avatar, because mm-hmm, although mm-hmm. we don't officially put Lin and Tenzin in this new Team Avatar the way that they're cruising around, I do think that they're extensions of it.
Oh, right? 100%. Yeah. You know? I got, you know, like I thought about that too. Like we'll see Team Avatar grow more as the series mm-hmm. continues, the same way that it did in Atla, right? We started out with three, and then by the end we had, you know, five or six. I mean, Suki also was part of Team Avatar. So it really grew. But yes, I totally agree with you. Tenzin and Lin are allies for sure.
Yep. And even Pema and the kids, right? Like even Pema and the kids, like on some to some extent, the kids for sure, as they keep growing. I mean, when you see them have it, like you know, really, really, they'll grow and evolve over time. But you know, Mako and Bolin, they bring their extraordinary bending, which is like really needed in a team, right? They need people who are like really great benders to fight against the big bad and the other things going on. And they also have practiced a great length during their pro bending career to like be able to hone their skills. And Asami brings her skillful fighting, her quick thinking, her knowledge of technology and innovation. She also brings some resources, I mean, to the team, to be honest. I mean, there's like always a person who's I find, you know, it's so funny because Asami has a lot of Toph in her too, which is really wild if you think about it. Like, right, like comes from a well-to-do family, like really great fighter, like, you know, thinks outside the box, but she doesn't have the bending, right? She doesn't have the bending portion. Obviously, you know, Toph is the greatest earthbender of all time. The Melon Lord.
And as one of our friends reminded us, also the Melon Lord.
Exactly. Yeah. We got called out. Like, hey, guys, you forgot one of Toph's most important titles, the Melon Lord. And yes, this is true. I have no argument. Basically all of these people, part of Team Avatar, all of them have something else in common. They all believe in Korra and they're loyal to her, which is something she's going to need as we move forward through the story.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
It's such a good time. Oh my gosh. What? I like this portion of the season. I think we start really digging into more of the backstories and the things that have happened before we got to Republic City. Those gaps that we don't see yet between imbalance and, you know, meeting Korra in the Southern Water Tribe. So this is great. Good stuff. And yeah. I hope that you're enjoying it.
Yeah, I really, when I first watched Korra, I wasn't crazy about the pro bending episodes, but upon rewatching, I understand why they need to happen, and I enjoyed them more and more, somewhat for the levity, but also just you're beginning to see them become a team in those episodes. So I really do enjoy this part of the season.
100%. Well, that is going to do it for this episode. We thank you guys for checking us out again and going back into this world and joining us to go through Republic City with Korra and the new Team Avatar. Go ahead and join us in our Facebook group. It's a brand new, newly minted Facebook group. Reach out to us on our social media, Instagram, Twitter. Leave reviews wherever you listen to podcasts, and you can always shoot us a message at kinfolklore@gmail.com. And we, that's it for us for this week, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Bye, everyone.